Australia pays tribute to fallen Queensland police officers. Brittany Higgins reaches a multi-million dollar settlement and the Bali bomb maker apologises to Australians. It's Wednesday, the 14th of December.
The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.
G'day, Matty.
G'day, mate. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day to you too. We're still in shock, aren't we, about that terrible incident in Queensland this week, resulted in the death of young police officers, and landmarks around WA and the rest of Australia have been illuminated blue overnight to pay their respects.
Yeah, here in Perth Council House, Matagurra Bridge Police Headquarters were among the landmarks beaming blue in support of these two young police officers killed over in Queensland in the line of duty during this regular missing persons inquiry. Just shocking, isn't it? And I think it has really galvanised people and made people realise the police officers every day put their lives on the line. They don't know what they're walking into.
Yeah.
And in this case, they were walking into a situation that, as the Queensland Police Commissioner says, it's a miracle that anybody got out.
Yeah, exactly. And more information is starting to come out now about this incident because, of course, everybody's scratching their heads at how something like this could even happen in the first place. And we now know that the 47-year-old Gareth Train, who was likely the architect of these killings, was paranoid and harboured conspiracy theories. He believed the 1996 Port Arthur massacre, which led to that Australian-wide crackdown on guns, John Howard's buyback, had been a false flag operation to disarm Australians, which is absolutely ridiculous. And he said that tactical police in Queensland targeted people who were conspiracy talkers or truthers. He looked at his homestead that was 3 hours west of Brisbane as an ark that would keep him safe in some kind of post-apocalyptic reality. He also believed that ASIO was monitoring his online posts, which were getting increasingly crazy. But police were largely unaware of his online activity when the four young constables, all aged under 30, were sent to the property on Monday afternoon. They were looking for his brother Nathaniel, who we now know was a respected school principal in New South Wales. He had been reported missing this month, but had really dropped off the radar in December of last year after he suffered a heart attack at his desk at the school, and then his mental health deteriorated after that. And so that was the reason the police had attended the property to see if Nathaniel had been there. But Nathaniel, Gareth and his wife Stacey were waiting where they ambushed the officers and put them under sustained gunfire. And as you say, the Queensland Police are amazed that anybody survived.
Yeah, those two police officers, one of them, the bloke who was grazed by the bullet, is expecting a child in only a couple of weeks. Just
it's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah. It's horrifying. And now the online presence of Nathaniel and Gareth Train going back years will now form part of the police investigation. And police will also investigate if the call for officers to come to the house was part of the plan. All along. And now we were warned that it was going to be a pretty bad bushfire season, and a blaze has broken out already in the north of Perth.
Yeah, so there was an emergency warning overnight for the town sites of Durian Bay and Cervantes. The good news is those town sites have been excluded from the current emergency warning, but that is still in place for Durian Bay and Nambung and surrounding areas. So there is a threat to lives and homes. Hundreds of residents fled late yesterday. Many cases, it's one road in, one road out. Roadblocks are in place on Indian Ocean Drive. So if you're planning to head that way, make sure you check the Main Roads website and Emergency WA website before you go for the latest information. But it seems like firefighters have gotten the upper hand when it comes to the two town sites of Durian Bay and Cervantes. And as we spoke about, we had this weather situation yesterday where we had this vigorous easterly airstream. The conditions ahead are in the 30s, and we don't have that sort of combination of that low pressure system and high pressure system, but still the threat is there this morning, so people are urged to take care.
Yeah, and I think we'll just keep our fingers crossed for a good outcome here. And it's a reminder for everybody who lives in areas that are prone to bushfires, get your bushfire safety plan happening. Like, clear the areas around your house.
Like,
go to the DFES website and really get organised, because it could be a tough summer ahead.
Yeah, and know what you're going to do. Like, are you going to stay and defend, or are you going to leave? Yeah.
Absolutely. And now with the borders being closed for the pandemic, we haven't really had many issues with Aussies in Bali over the last couple of years. But now we can go back to the popular holiday aisle. It hasn't taken long for issues to reappear, and this story is quite shocking.
This is intriguing. So Indonesian police are this morning investigating the sudden death of a young Perth woman who recently flew to Bali for dental treatment. And so mystery surrounds how she died. She's a University of WA master's student. Her name is Nee Finneran Loader. We're told she went over there for the dental treatment. She was very happy with the outcome of the dental treatment. This, what is interesting to me is an autopsy has only just been conducted this week, even though she died 2 weeks ago. And now her family faces this agonising wait for answers. It could take months. They're over in Bali at the moment arranging the repatriation of her body. So the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade has confirmed the death and says it's providing consular assistance to this young woman's family. A lot of questions over this, and obviously Indonesian police are looking into it at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, definitely a lot of questions. And sticking with Bali news, an Indonesian militant who was paroled last week after serving about half of his original 20-year prison sentence for making the explosive used in the 2002 Bali bombings has come out and apologised to victims. So Hisham bin Alazin, who's better known by his alias Umar Patek, was a leading member of Jamaah Islamiyah and was blamed for the blasts at two nightclubs at Kuta Beach that killed 202 people, including 88 Australians. And so there was a lot of outrage in Australia when he was released very early in his sentence last week. But now he's come out and told reporters that I apologise not only to the people in Bali in particular, but I also apologise to all Indonesian people. I also sincerely apologise, especially to the Australians who also experienced a very great impact from the Bali bombing crime. I also apologise to the victims and their families, both at home and abroad, whatever their nationality, whatever their ethnicity, whatever their religion, I sincerely apologise to all of them. What do you make of that?
Oh, it's a bit empty. I mean, an apology should come with, and this will not happen again.
Yeah.
I will not do this. I have changed my ways. I will now commit myself to making sure other terrorists don't go through with this sort of thing. But there's none of that.
Well, he has a chance. He has a chance.
Very great impact. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the wording's right.
I know.
Well, I mean, it may be lost in translation.
He has a chance to, I guess, follow up those words with some actions, because the Indonesian authorities maintain that, you know, he successfully reformed in prison and that they're going to use him to influence other militants to turn away from terrorism. I guess, let's see what happens.
This feels to me like, you know how there was a little bit of uproar, obviously, about his release? It's kind of this delayed thing from the Indonesians. Oh, let's get him to apologise and this will appease and help the relationship with Australia.
Yeah, I don't think it's helping.
I don't think so.
And now it's another day, another sex abuse scandal in WA's mining industry. A BHP worker was sacked after he forced a woman to sexually penetrate him with a massage tool at a Mount Hawthorne beauty salon.
This is a bizarre story.
Very bizarre. So Dane Anthony Blome admitted to the indecent assault at Perth Magistrates Court, where it was also revealed that he'd been convicted of masturbating in public twice in 2018. The senior electrical inspector was sacked on Tuesday from BHP after the company learned of the court proceedings and his prior criminal record. So the court was told that this 40-year-old FIFO worker gave his victim, who was a 22-year-old masseuse, a rigid plastic tool, right, which he insisted was a massaging device recommended to him by a physiotherapist, okay, and asked her to apply it to the back of his legs. But then But then he's rolled over and grabbed the masseuse's hand and forced her to stick the tool where the sun don't shine. And she immediately alerted her boss and the police. And he got dressed and left the salon with his physiotherapist recommended massaging tool, apparently. And he was arrested several days later. And he's due to be sentenced today.
And he's a father of four.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And so, of course, BHP issued an apology to women earlier this year who had been subjected to sexual harassment across its offices and mine sites after, you know, it had received substantiated reports of more than 100 cases of sexual harassment over the past 12 months.
And they only found out about it because of the inquiries from the West Australia.
Correct.
So he didn't alert them that he'd been charged.
He did not.
He didn't tell them perhaps what was it? Did it just work out with his FIFO swing that he was off while appearing in court?
I know. Very, very average.
Mount Hawthorne. I wouldn't have thought that, but
there you go. And the prosecutor said, made the good point that just because it's a massage therapist doesn't mean they deserve any less respect
than a doctor's
surgery. You wouldn't go into a doctor's surgery and do that. And now, former Liberal staffer Brittany Higgins has settled her personal injury claim against the Commonwealth after a short mediation. So we knew this was on the cards, that she'd brought civil case against the Commonwealth after the complete debacle that was a criminal case. But the terms of this settlement will remain confidential. Her lawyers say that's at Brittany Higgins' request. So it's not the Commonwealth government trying to keep it hush-hush. That's her request. And the prosecutors, you might recall, dropped criminal charges against Bruce Lerman for her alleged rape because of a concern that the trial would risk her well-being. So that's probably a factor here as well. Lerman, of course, has maintained his innocence through all of this and is himself maybe considering some kind of civil case either against the Commonwealth or the media, and he's named a few people in that threat, including the ABC and the Project.
Yeah, I don't think we've heard the end of this. What makes it interesting is people will be saying, hang on a minute, taxpayers, we're paying this settlement, but what are we paying it for if he's saying I'm innocent?
Yeah.
The trial's, you know, hasn't got underway. You know, there's questions in the grey area there. I understand Brittany Higgins wants respect with regards to not having the settlement made public. But I think, and there's a lot of discussion about this, that there's questions over, well, what happened? Be honest with us. What actually happened then?
Yeah.
Like, we know what happened with the trial. We know what happened with the juror. But be honest. How can it be that we've got this compensation being paid and yet we're being told nothing happened?
Yeah. It's a strange situation. It just goes to show there's really no winners here. Just like there's no winners in the collapse of the cryptocurrency exchange FTX. We've spoken about it on the show a couple of times. And so the founder and former chief executive of FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, has now been charged with fraud. He was arrested in the Bahamas after the Bahamian government realized that the US had brought charges against him. And so it follows civil charges brought by the SEC in America, accusing the 30-year-old former billionaire of defrauding investors by building a company that they say was a house of cards. New York District Attorney Damian Williams called it one of the biggest financial frauds in American history. And so at one point, Bankman-Fried's fortune was valued at $26 billion before the company's collapse. Many people lost a lot of money in this complete debacle with FTX. But last month, he told a conference in New York, look, I screwed up. That's how he put it. I screwed up. But he maintained that he didn't ever try to commit fraud, and he was shocked by the collapse of FTX.
You'll be interested to know, I've just looked it up.
Bahamian.
Sport.
And Argentina are into their second World Cup final in 8 years after Lionel Messi and Julian Alvarez helped the Argentinians to a comfortable 3-0 win over Croatia in the semi-finals overnight. Despite a promising start from the Croatians, who were the smallest nation still left in the World Cup, Argentina were clinical on the counter-attack. They scored 2 goals just before halftime and cruised to victory. And now Argentina will meet the winner of France and Morocco, who play in the other semi-final, which happens at 3 a.m. on Thursday morning.
The Wild West.
Now, Maddie, were you sad to see that Elon Musk is no longer the world's richest man?
Oh, so sad. So, thoughts and prayers for Elon.
Thoughts and prayers to Elon today.
He's probably banned me from Twitter now after saying that.
Yeah, exactly. So he used to be the world's richest man, and there was daylight second. At one point, late 2021, his personal wealth peaked at around $336 billion.
$336 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people starving in the world.
I know, right? That's an insane amount of money. Because a lot of it was tied to Tesla shares and all of the other stuff that he's into.
Hang on, so there's someone now that's the richest person?
Yes, but it's not necessarily that they have overtaken Elon. It's more that Elon has gone backwards.
Unforced error.
Tesla shares have slumped, lost more than half of their value. That's cost him alone $100 billion this year. Then, of course, he bought Twitter for $43 billion. We'll wait and see if that turns out to be a good investment. And so now the title of world's richest man goes to Bernard Arnault, who, if you're not familiar with him, he's the CEO of the company that owns sort of Louis Vuitton and all the luxury goods like Dior, Tiffany, Bulgari.
Is there one company that owns all of those?
Yeah. LVMH, mega fashion company from Europe. And so now he's worth $170.6 billion.
Wow. Is that because Bali was closed off to us and we weren't buying cheap handbags? Well, we had to buy the real ones?
Because during the pandemic, everybody started buying luxury items online and stuff like that. So they have shares in that company have gone through the roof. So while some businesses really struggled during the pandemic, these luxury fashion houses, some of them did very, very well.
Wow. And that's where the JobKeeper and JobSeeker went.
Yeah. So he's done good. So he's now the number one. Elon Musk, number two, $163 billion. And Gautam Adani of the Adani Group comes in at number three, $125 billion.
Ooh. Oh, if they want to throw any our way, we'll happily
take it. And that's your news from the West Australian for Wednesday, December 14. And don't forget to subscribe to The West Live on your favourite podcast player. Matty, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Will do. Cheers, mate.
You've been listening to The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.